Fine. So yesterday we mostly covered the Sudgan Duff Bays through the top of Duff Gimel. And in each stage in the Gemara, we noted that there is this constant tension about whether when the Gemara says, no, that doesn't prove that there's Hezekriya, whether that's because it's saying, yes, there is Hezekriya, but we argue about the exact parameters and scope. Right? Or are they saying, no, that which looks like Hezekriya is something qualitatively different. The difference, the implication is going to be whether we can derive anything from those cases to, once we paskin Hezekriya Shmei Hezek, right, whether the case of the required privacy in the courtyard case, whether we can derive concepts from the case of the Chatzer and the Gag and the case of the Gina and all those cases, or whether those are wholly different conceptually. Right, that's really what's at stake in all of these sugyot. And especially since we do have some hint as to what drive those cases. So in one case, the Gemara is explicit that the problem, in the case of the Gag v'Chatzer, that the problem is the prevention of usage. Right? It's explicit. Right? That the Gag Chatzer case, the problem is that the person in the Gag is unfairly infringing on the property rights of the Chatzer. The mashal I gave to Rami during Seder, but I think it was just Rami who was here, right? And I said, right, the argument would basically go like this, right? If we'll pick two different people today, if Yaakov and Gavi choose to be to rent an apartment together, right? So, you could see their living arrangement going in one of two ways, right? You could either see them both deciding that they're going to give up on certain activities that they might have engaged in had they lived alone, right? I mean, maybe they're comfortable when they live alone coming out of the shower in just a towel and then getting dressed in their room, but when they have roommates, they're not going to do that. They're going to get dressed, right, in the bathroom after the shower or something like that, right? Or you could choose to say, look, we live together as roommates and we're willing to live with lower levels of privacy, right? And we're just going to live with that and engage in activity, right? And not let it bother us. So you could see it going both ways. That's essentially Hezek Riyah Shmei Hezek, Lav Shmei Hezek. You both live in a Chatzer. There's two ways of looking at it. Either we both live in the Chatzer, we don't expect privacy, so we're going to engage in our private acts, or no, we do expect privacy. But if you choose to have your own apartment, it would really bother you and it'd be a real infringement on your privacy if someone else had the key to your apartment and once in a blue moon showed up uninvited and unannounced. Because even though 90% of the time you're totally in private, the fact that the possibility that they'll show up while you're in the shower, right, and then is enough to make it that you're never fully comfortable in your own house, and we would understand that in that case, we should demand that the person knock or call ahead before they show up to your house. That's essentially the Gag and Chatzer argument, is that two people in a Chatzer, you could see it going both ways, but when one person is in the Chatzer and always uses his yard, right, and the only reason he's not going to be able to use his yard is because once in a while someone goes on his roof, right, that is unacceptable. Okay. Okay, but in that case, the Gemara explicitly says that the issue is the prevention of use. By the case of the Gina, Rashi at least thinks it's actually damage, right? Ayin Hara, whatever Ayin Hara means, but it seems to be damage. In each of those cases, you have to ask, are those Hezekriya of a different scope, and therefore it teaches us something about the normal case of Hezekriya, or are those qualitatively different, and Hezekriya is not like either of those? Okay, but I give you two other Gemaras, which, for those of you who did it, I heard you were all happy that I surprised you, and these weren't nearly as long as the original passage. I don't usually, in one shot, give you an entire blot to read. That was, by the way, the reason in the end I didn't start with Yesh Nochlin, is because Yesh Nochlin, it would be every shir, would be like two blot at a time. That's just the way Yesh Nochlin works. Maybe we'll get to it at some point. That's the eighth parak of Basra. Okay, but these are slightly smaller Gemaras. So, One is the Mishnah on Daf Nuntet. So who wants to take the Mishnah on Daf Yutet? Nuntet. This is one of the longest Prakim in Shas. It's a very long parak, Ches Karabatim. We will eventually get to some of it, not all of it. It is 32 blot long. I think it's the second longest parak. I believe the longest parak in Shas is the first parak of Kiddushin, which, because the second parak of Kiddushin only starts in Daf Mem Aleph, I think. It seems reasonable. There's a good 10 Masechta that the entire Masechta is shorter than that. So, I think that's right. Okay, anyways. Not really important in any way, shape, or form. Who wants to take the Mishnah on Nuntet Amud Bet? Okay, that's fair enough. So you don't have to volunteer. Or you can, I don't care. You know, Ezra, you're volunteering? Okay, good. Ezra's volunteering, good. Okay, so what's the first halacha? What does lo yiftach adam chalanotav l'chatzer ha-shutfin mean? Okay, good. Right. If you have a property in an adjacent courtyard, you shouldn't open the windows to now peek into the courtyard that's not yours. Right? Because that's already a real... Right? It's one thing that you have the people that you agreed to share space with. It's another thing to invade the privacy of someone else's chatzer. Okay. Right, you build a second floor, an attic. Right, build it in, right, away from the courtyard, and then build the aliyah gab beito b'chalatoch beito, right, meaning. Open the windows facing away from the joint property. Okay? Right, so like build. Okay? Yeah. Fine. So the Gemara says, yeah. Nami lo. Sorry, Nami. Right, why are you saying you can't open it into joint property? Right, you shouldn't be able to open your property into private property either. So the Gemara says, correct. Right, lo mi bai kamar. Obviously, you shouldn't open your window straight into somebody else's house. Right, you know that's obvious. You have a semi-attached house, and you decide you want more light, so you break a hole in between the house. Right, so you get light when. Your neighbor turns on their lights, right? Obviously, you don't do that, right? That's unacceptable. Yeah. They have this, like... Obviously, you can. He's saying, the Gemara Mishnah even didn't tell you that, right? It's like when I was living in Toronto, the houses... There was one block where the houses are, like, kacha, right? Like, this far apart from each other, right? And it's illegal to build the window on that side of the house, right? You can't have a window on that, right? All the windows are supposed to be on the same direction, so that it's window, wall, right? You're not allowed to have a window on the second side because it's a violation of privacy, right? So the Gemara says, that's obvious. You can't do that. The Chiddush, because no one wants someone staring at you in your own house, right? That's obviously problematic. The Chiddush is that you can't even open the window into a joint space. Yeah.
Is it saying you can't have it both windows or even just one window on the wall?
You can't open... What do you mean?
Oh,
the Toronto example... Yeah. The assumption is because you can see in. Right? However it is, right? You can see in. Figure out how you can see in. I don't know if they have a window. I don't know if they have... What?
It was the courtyard of the space.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So building within the space into a joint space, the problem is that you're looking into the joint space, not everybody looking to your house, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. Okay, let's at least get through the Gemara and then let's analyze it. Okay, good. So now the Gemara says, The Amar Lei, right? This is a very important line. He said, "What's the Chiddush? Why would you have thought that?" Someone is allowed to open up a window into a joint space. So, Da'amar Lei, because what will the guy say to you? Right? So what does he say? What's his argument? Rami, you find it funny. I don't know why, but what's funny about it? I don't know. Oh, no, you didn't find it. Okay. You were laughing at it. Sometimes it's more is funny. I don't know. Okay, yeah. What does he say to him? Yeah. Yeah. He said, you might have thought that the guy will say, look, you're already in a semi-public space, right? You already couldn't, you already weren't fully private. So what do you care if another person looks in, right? What difference does it make to you? And what does the Gemara say? No. It's actionable. Why is it actionable? Why is it enforceable? Why can I stop him? Because?
Because without that window, you would be private
with someone else. Yeah, we'll read it. He says, Da'amar Lei, ad'idna b'chatzer hava b'inayt s'noi minach. Yeah, right? Before it was, yeah.
Isn't this still a problem, though? Because, like, you never know when the person's going to come out of this house with the courtyard. So there's still always that fear of the black part due to the fact that he can come out.
Correct, and nevertheless, 100%. And, right, look at Tosus makes it clear, right? Right, but Tosus notes that there's a machloket. How do you understand this? Tosus is perish. Kshataba bayit. Right? How does Tosfos understand it? When you were in the house. Meaning I used to have to worry about you showing up in the chatzer. That happens a lot, but not as often as you're in your house. And now I'm worried more. But he says, perish acher, alternatively, sheperish akontris, kishanid bayit. Near the Rashba. Rashi says, no, the problem is that now you can see into my house. Right? And Joseph said, I don't like that. Right? Why? Said, that's not the case, because the Mishnah said that the window is opened into the Chatzer, not into your house. And therefore, Joseph said, the simplest shot of this Gemara, and for the moment we'll go with Tosfot, is that what he's saying is, look, I used to only have to worry about you in the chatzer. Now I have to worry about you constantly. Even when you're home, you opened a bay window. Now you're constantly spying on me.
What's the difference? Like,
always
that
oh, good. So Yehonatan is the Havamina, right? That was literally the Havamina. The Gemara said, he could say to you, I could always come in the chatzer. You can't stop me from hanging out in the chatzer. And the answer is, yeah, but you don't normally hang out in the chatzer all the time. So I had respite, but if you put a big bay window in your house, I never have respite. You're right, you could have stayed outside, but the reality is you didn't, right? The reality is you didn't. I know, right? I know that most people don't get up, don't leave their house by 5 in the morning. So I don't mind that when I go out and I take the garbage out at 5 in the morning, I'm in my undershirt, right? What? No, they eat breakfast at 5 in the morning inside. They don't leave the house till 6. Thank you, Yehonatan, you identify with the Havamina. The Gemara says that was the Havamina, the Maskana was not. But now, tell me, this is a huge Chiddush, because what does this Gemara now add? What's the Chiddush? Since it's negating Yehonatan. So Yehonatan, tell me what the Gemara is telling you is not the case.
That there's no difference between the window and not having a window.
Put it in more legal terms. Right? Highlight the Chiddush more precisely. There is a difference. You're wrong. They didn't say there wasn't a difference. There is a difference. Yeah, well, what's the difference? It's not just that there's a difference. Obviously, there's a difference.
The level of, like, probability that they will see, and therefore the level of fear goes up.
And therefore? But and therefore what? You still haven't gotten, right? Put the Chiddush in legal terms. You're almost there. Very good, right? It's not just that there's a difference. The point is that that difference is legal, right? That has legal significance, meaning even though you didn't have privacy before, the fact that I'm minimizing your privacy is significant halachically, and therefore I can prevent you from doing it. That's, right? The Gemara is saying the Havamina is, if you have privacy, so I understand that I can't violate your privacy. But if you don't have privacy anyways, who cares? A little bit of privacy, right? A lot of privacy, a little bit less privacy, who cares? And the Gemara's Chiddush is, no, that's not true. That's not true.
So where do you draw the line, where you say, you can have this amount of privacy, but if you take this amount away, then you can't do
I don't know yet, but all I know is the Gemara is telling us that it is the case that if you... The Havamina was, if you have privacy, I can't take it away from you. But if you don't have privacy anyways, from me, right? Because I could come to the Chatzer, you couldn't stop me from sitting in the Chatzer all day. Right? If I wanted to, I could camp out in the Chatzer. There's nothing you can do to stop me. Right? So you might have thought, so if I can camp out in the Chatzer, so why do you care that now I can see you from the house? And the answer is, I do. Because at the end of the day, that wasn't what you were normally going to do. And therefore, I had some sort of privacy, and now I don't have it.
So it's based on the normal...
Yep.
So if you already had a courtyard with windows facing into the courtyard, you couldn't make them cover the windows since it was already established that there were those windows when it passed into the courtyard.
Say that again?
As if it was a normal thing to have windows facing into the courtyard, then it wouldn't be a problem. If there were already windows in the house that faced into the courtyard, building a window from your house into the courtyard would be a problem because it wouldn't be a different... It would be a lessening.
Okay.
So even if it was a lessening of privacy, it's already the normal thing to have that lesser amount of privacy.
Okay.
Is that true?
Try it one more time. Let me make sure I got it.
If you have a courtyard,
yeah.
There are already windows facing into the courtyard. First of all, can you make it?
So maybe not, right? Meaning if the given was we have windows open into the courtyard, that's just the given, then opening another window presumably doesn't make a difference.
Like I'm saying, is it an objective thing that in all cases you shouldn't have windows facing the courtyard, or is it based on...
Nope, it's not objective. Yeah. We'll get to objective, we're not there yet.
Yeah.
We're not there yet.
It's not like what is already.
Yeah, okay. Exactly. That's exactly what he's saying. Until now I could do X, now I can't, right? You couldn't get more subjective language than that, right? The Gemara is saying it's not objective. It's saying until now I could do X, now I can't,
so
right?
If you already had windows in the courtyard,
yeah. So now the Gemara says, continuing, the Gemara says, Tanu Rabbanan. Now we get a story. Maaseh ba'adam echad shepatach chalonotav lechatzer ha'shutfin. There was once a guy who did this. Uval lefnei Rabbi Yishmael bar Rabbi Yosi. Amar lo hechezakda. Bini hechazakta. So what did he say to him? You have made a chazaka. What is a chazaka? Right? This is now, you now have the right to do it. You have claimed your rights because nobody stopped you. No one challenged you. So now you're allowed to have your window open into the chatzer.
But
So, right, so the assumption is he has to be there, right? Because have to wait for the third parak to flesh this out. But the Gemara says there's an assumption that you need to be mocha, you need to protest. And if you don't protest, then people can gain rights, implied rights. So that's the position of Rabbi Shmuel. Uvalifnei Rabbi Chiya, but then they went to Rabbi Chiya, and what did he say? Amar yagata upatachta, you put an effort and opened it. Right now, yagavasatom. Go, close it. Put in the same effort and close up your window. So Amar, what?
So it seems like there are two things, whether or not that is objective thing or subjective.
What?
It seems like there are two things,
So it's not objective or subjective. So the way the Gemara seems to take this, if you look at Rashi, is the machloket is there are two types of chazaka. Some things are chazaka immediately, right? If you claim your right and no one protests, it's such an egregious violation that if no one said anything, it must be they're okay with it. And some things are like mild violation, so it takes 3 years for you to claim that right. So the machloket here is whether it's the type of violation that generates an immediate response, and therefore, without the immediate response, you get the right? Or is it the type of thing that people can survive for a while, and therefore you need 3 years of uninterrupted usage to assume squatter's rights, essentially? So he's, because he says you need 3 years. Otherwise, you can't assume that you have the right. No. Any point during 3 years, someone can stop you. If no one stopped you for 3 years, then you have rights. Because you don't have a right. It's if you manage to get through 3 years of no one stopping you, that would acquire the rights, and then no one could stop you. But
you have the right to do it for 3 years.
No. You don't have the right to do it for 3 years. Within 3 years, someone has the right to stop you, and if no one stopped you for 3 years, but you, according to Reb Chiya, they have the right to stop you at any point during 3 years.
So why is it saying there's a problem to do it anyways?
Because the people didn't want it. They said stop. No, that's the case, right? Uba, meaning the court case came. Rabbi Shmuel said, right? Rabbi Shmuel said, you already got your rights. They can't stop you anymore. Rabbi Chiya says, no. Go close it up. They protested. Yeah. So I'm Rav Nachman v'listom. So he says, "La'alter v'chazak shina masu yishesod min arubivana v'shote." Grace of the machlokes is it the type of thing that immediately people would normally challenge it? And if they don't, there's assumed consent or not. Now, for a moment, let's look at this gemara. Is this hezek ra'iyah? Is this Mishnah talking about hezek ra'iyah? This case, the guy in the house looking into the chatzer, is that hezek ra'iyah? So who thinks for sure yes? What? Rashi, thank you. Rashi. Right, Rashi thinks this is hezek ra'iyah, right? So according to Rashi, this Gemara teaches us something about hezek ra'iyah, namely, well, one thing is yes, is that this subject to chazaka, and what's the other thing? What? Yeah, and that even a quantitative decrease in the amount of privacy you have is hezek ra'iyah according to Rashi. Right? That's what you learn in this Gemara.
I'm curious,
what's the other possibility here? The other possibility is that this is not about hezek ra'iyah per se, it's about neighborly rights. Right? Is that this isn't a hezek question, it's just we bought the property without the window. And that the assumption was that's how you buy the property. You can't change the norm. This has nothing to do with hezek ra'iyah. This has to do with hilchot shofen, right? Hilchot shcheinim is we bought the property. This was the norm. You can't change the norm. But this is not about hezek ra'iyah. It's not that it's damaging. It's just a change of the norm. You're not allowed to change. Because when you bought the property, right, you bought it under existing circumstances. Not necessarily. You can't necessarily. If you buy a house in an apartment building, right? You can't just change anything just because it's your apartment. Maybe you can inside. Maybe, right? But you can't. But you can't do it in a way that would affect other people's living in that space. What? But this is a house with this is a house in a joint chatzer. It's like a co-op. Right?
Oh, so you're saying it's like a joint house.
It's a joint chatzer.
Yeah, but your house is separate from the other house.
But your window is opening into the joint property. What do you mean? Correct, because, and that's a joint, because you're affecting the joint property. You can't do that. You can, because now people, what do you mean? Now more people can
see. Exactly, so that would be, wouldn't that be a problem of privacy?
Yeah, fine, but is the problem the privacy, or is the problem that we entered into this arrangement? Again, is the problem here privacy per se, or is it the implied consent that we all had, the implied agreement, contractual agreement we had? Look, Yonatan, no, like, Yonatan, if I say, look, my deal with you is if you want to live in, right? If you want to live in this in this property, right, you have to make me a cup of tea every morning, right? No one's going to... If you sign that contract, you're bound to it, right? That doesn't mean that there's an objective right to being served tea, right? So you could look at this Mishnah and say, oh, this teaches you Hezek Riyashmeh Hezek, which is what Rashi assumes, right? But you could also look at this and say, no, maybe the problem here is simply when they bought the house... The reality was there wasn't a window open from the house into the chatzer, so they bought it on that assumption. It's not that under normal circumstances they have the right to that privacy. They just bought the privacy on the property on the assumption that they'd have that level of privacy, and now you're changing the assumptions. Because, as I just said, if you buy a property with a certain assumption, why is it that people will... What do you mean? Why do people sue the government when they say, oh, you're opening a highway next to my house? Why do you care? It's not in your house. And they'll say, no, I bought a house on a quiet street on the assumption that it was going to be a quiet street. If you open a highway, it's... Right? And these will sometimes win in court. Why? I didn't do anything in your house. The answer is no. Because I brought... Unless you tell me otherwise, when I buy a property... I'm allowed to assume that nothing radical is going to change, right? If it was in the zoning, right?
But this is saying that the radical change is the window in front of the house.
Correct.
So you have to ask, why does such a radical change? Because of the privacy. So it goes back to the privacy.
Fine, but it's not a privacy as an... No one argues that people subjectively care about privacy, right? No. Yonatan, no one cares. No one argues that people subjectively care about privacy. Yeah. And therefore, if... You agree to it. You can be bound because you agree to it. Yeah. That doesn't mean that it's an objective category.
Yeah.
Right? So Rashi assumes that the issue here is the objective question called Hezekriya, the objective value of privacy.
Yeah.
Right? But you could have looked at this Mishnah and said, this is not a Mishnah about Hezekriya. This is a question about what is a reasonable assumption of... When you buy a property, of what's going to change and what's not going to change.
But then I still think it ties back to Hezekriya.
No, not necessarily, because you theoretically could look and say the exact same thing about, you know, anything, right? Meaning, obviously people care about privacy, and that's part of what motivates the category of Hezekriya.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that that's what's going on here. Not pitam. If I buy a property, because it is, I don't know, because it's close to a shopping center, right? And the government decides to rezone, right? So I can challenge that in court and potentially win. Because saying when I bought the property, it wasn't zoned. It was zoned as a shopping center. It was zoned for shopping. You can't now change it for what?
That's obviously a radical change.
But I could do the same thing with anything. I bought it next to a park. I bought it where there wasn't a school. You could say about literally anything.
Those are all radical changes. But you made that distinction.
Right, the thing is, there's no right to live next to a shopping center. It's only because
Yeah.
Yes, but it's a radical change.
Correct. But a subjective radical change, right? A subjective radical change can be significant simply because you agreed to it. Meaning, anything we agree to,
yeah.
One could argue that I can stop you from changing it, not because I care and we entered into this agreement. Correct, but that's why I keep giving you examples. If you buy a property in a quiet neighborhood, right? Why is it that the government will put up signs and say, a request has been submitted to change the zoning. If you have a, right, if you would like to oppose it, there will be, right, either come to this town hall meeting or send a letter. Why do they do that? Why do they do that? Answer my question first. Why do they do that?
So people can... Yeah,
but why are they doing that? Why are they letting people claim? Why do they care? The government has the right to change the zoning, right? They're not... What are they asking? Because they... The reason that it's even relevant is because they assume you bought it under certain assumptions, right? And therefore, even though this doesn't directly affect your house... It's something that you might potentially have brought, take into account. It might affect the price of that the area, etc., etc. And therefore, right, even though it's subjective, right, even though it's subjective, look, for some people, you want a shul next to your house, and that would make the value of the property go up. For some people, you don't want it, and it would make the value go down, right? It's not a objective good or bad, right? And we all know that in certain areas, if you're within the Eruv, right, it drives the price of your house up. But in, right, all those court cases in New Jersey, all the people said, don't put an Eruv because we don't want Hasidim moving in, right? That's subjectively an eyesore, right? Right? It was going to court, right? And the question was, is having Hasidim move in actionable? Or is that something I can enforce in court, a change, right? You might be able to.
Okay, but where is the line drawn between what is and something you can enforce what is?
Again, I'm not getting into the question. This whole second parak is about this,
yeah.
Right? My point is that this Mishnah, Rashi thinks it's about the objective question, which is Hezekiah, is the objective demands of privacy.
Okay.
Right? You could have read this about not objective demands of privacy, but to what extent can we... How much of a subjective change are we... Is the court willing to recognize that you have to check before you change?
Okay, that's
right? And if that's the case, it wouldn't tell you about Hezekiah. You're right. They're both derived from the fact that people care about privacy.
Yeah.
But that's...
Okay, yeah. You just worded the other way to read the mission, like a lot of...
Right, meaning my right, like, look, or to give it, let's fine, but let's like, I'll just give one more example to make sure it gets, like, noise, right? Noise is something objectively that people care about, right? So, if something was a quiet neighborhood, right, and now people throw parties every night, right, late into the night, that's something that can be, right, brought to court, right? In most places. However, right? However, I remember once reading, right? Someone showed me once, this was in Sharon. Someone showed me this one summer when I was in Sharon. Sharon is one of the lowest crime cities in, like, America. So when I first came to Sharon for the summer, what? What? It's really low crime. So someone showed me for fun the police report. They put the police report in the newspaper sometimes. And it was, police responded to complaint from Mrs. Smith, right, of, like, unacceptable noise. Police informed Mrs. Smith that people are allowed to jog in the morning around the neighborhood, right? Like, end of case, right? So there's things that are, like, subjectively bother you, and you will just say, yeah, but you know what? Even though it's a change, because when you moved here, no one jogged, right? And now someone jogs, we'll say, too bad. Then there are things that are objective. And then there are things like the Israeli siesta, right? Right? Where normal human beings would tell you that kids playing in the afternoon outside, right, is like acceptable level noise. But when my wife's family spent a year in Israel when she was in elementary school, my father-in-law was doing a degree at Ben-Gurion, the first day they come, they're playing outside in the afternoon, and someone comes and says, excuse me, but here, between 1 and 3, everybody naps, and kids are not allowed outside. Okay? That's clinically insane. But in Israel, this is what you live with. This is the accepted standard. You come to Be'er Sheva in the 90, you know, whatever year it was, right? In the late 90s, we have siesta. Right? And no one, kids don't play outside between 1 and 3. Right? It's in New York, if you said that, they would laugh in your face or punch you or mash you, yeah? Right? In Israel, it's something where they assume that there was a cultural norm. So it could be that our Mishnah is not about the, and again, no one's denying that noise as a category is something that is legally relevant. The question is, how much? So it could be that our Mishnah is about the objective standard, right? Hezekriya. Or it could be about the... how much do we care about your subjective concern, right, when you bought under a certain assumption, right? In which case, it wouldn't teach us anything, right? Israel's a funny place sometimes. It really is. Siesta is the weirdest thing in the world. It made sense when they worked in the fields in 1 to 3. You can't work under the Middle Eastern sun. That's where it came from. It's crazy. It's crazy. When I was in yeshiva, I don't understand businessmen. I mamish don't. The new person who owns the Makalet in Alon Shvut is a better businessman. But when I was in yeshiva, he was like an old-time Israeli who believed in siesta. So he would close the Makalet during siesta time at like 1:30 or 1, whatever it was. Except there are 500 hungry yeshiva guys down the thing, and that is their break. But the fact that that's when they wanted to buy snacks, he didn't care. Because that's my nap time, right? It makes no sense, right? He should have only been open during siesta. But no, right? That's not how he thinks. Okay, people are crazy, right? That's not the point. But sometimes you can enforce craziness if everyone understood that that was the assumptions when you moved in. Don't even get me started on the Israeli post office. I cannot deal with the Israeli post office. Okay? Yosef Bluth asked me this morning if I have stamps. I'm like, why would I have stamps? I never, if I can avoid it, go to the post office. Ever, and definitely in this country. It is a nightmare. It is terrible. It is unbelievable. Yesterday, I got a text from the Moetza, right, from the government in Efrat, with a picture of the post office, because apologizing, because the post office was worse than normal, because their computer was down. So there was a huge line, and they decided that the good way of dealing with things was just screaming out random numbers on packages, which is like, you know, 2773GXI. Is that anybody's? And just yelling randomly into the crowd, okay? There is no logic to the way post office deals in this country. It's crazy. Banks, post office, they're the worst. The worst. It's unbelievable. That by when the Gush was built in 50 plus years ago, in 1967, there was like nobody living there. And at the time, Mizrahi Tvachot, the bank, made a deal that Alon Shvut would get the bank, and like in the 80s, when Efrat was built, Efrat got something else. I don't even remember what it was. Maybe it's the... I don't know what they got in return. To this day, there are like 100,000 people living in the Gush. There is one branch of one bank in the entire Gush, and it's open from 8:30 in the morning until noon, Sunday through Thursday, and then twice a week for 2 hours in the afternoon when everybody's at work. It is not open ever when you're not at work. This is Israel for you. Yes. Okay? It doesn't make any sense. And until Corona, the amazing thing about Corona is until Corona, they claimed that you could not do anything online. Everything, you had to come into the branch. Suddenly Corona, they figured out computers exist. Right? Now suddenly you can do things like ask for anything on the computer. But until then, So yes, people can ask for crazy things and it can be enforced. Some things I will never get used to, okay? Doesn't matter how many years I'm here, I just can't deal with it. Post office and the banks, it's like... Apparently banks are not like that in cities, just in, you know... What? Like, you know, Yishuvim or something. Like, when I visit my sister, the banks are open all day, right? Okay, fine. But that is... Okay, good. So now let's try to at least get this one more Gemara down, and then we'll have the last piece of information. So here is the Gemara on Daf Samech, okay? I'll read it quickly. Lo yiftach adam lechatzer shutvin petach keneged petach. So now we go farther. Don't open a door opposite a door. Okay? V'chalon keneged chalon. Right? This is the problem. This is the Thornhill example. Toronto example. Whatever. Thornhill, technically where I lived. Right? Is, right, stagger the windows. Right? That's what the law is in, right? Windows on one side. Right? Don't have windows that look at each other like this. Okay? Haya katan, if you had a small window, lo yasenu gadol, don't expand it, right? Don't say, I was okay with a little light window, so let me build a big bay window looking into your house. That doesn't work, right? Echad, just because you had one window, lo yasa shnayim, that's not a heter to put a second window there. Avo potech ulur shudar abim, petach keneged petach. But if you're facing the public, so there's no problem, because once you had a window facing the public, what does it matter, right? So the Gemara says, Minahani Mili. One second, let me just read the Gemara. Then you can attack me. Minahani Mili, how do you know? So Amar Rabbi Yochanan de Amar Kra, the first time we've seen a pasuk on this issue at all. Vayisa Bilam et Einav Vayard Yisrael Shochen Lishvatav. Because Bilam looked at the Jewish people dwelling to their Shvatim. Ma ra'a, what did he see? Ra'a she'ein pitchei o'alim mechuvanim ze laze. Right? And Rashi adds that this is why he said, Matovu o'alecha Yaakov. What so impressed Bilam about the way Jews live? That we maintain privacy. We don't open windows into each other's houses. We don't open doors into each other's houses. Amar ru'uyin halalu shetishre aleihem shechina. And he said, these people are worthy of having the shechina dwell on them. Okay. This is the first time. Is this Hezekiah? Does the Gemara say it's Hezekiah? No. What is the value here?
Privacy.
But, is this the same privacy as everything we saw until now? Why not? Apparently not. I know you know that's what I want you to say. But please tell me why not. What? Neither did the previous one. There's something more important. Yeah. Yeah, Yaakov. Yes, go. Let Yaakov talk. Yes. For he's not talking about courtyard. There's something even bigger here for me. Ezra. I'll put it slightly differently. Until now, we've been talking about bin adam l'chavero. What you can expect from other people. Is this bin adam l'chavero? No. This is bin adam l'makom. This is you. You should maintain privacy. Right? Even if you didn't care. The point is that there's a certain level of privacy that we actually think you should have. Right, not just that other people should allow you to have, but that you should have, like, actively. Until now, we've either been talking about contract law, right, or neighborly rights, right, property zoning issues. But for the first time, the simple read of the Gemara is that we're not talking about that. We're talking about a certain base level of privacy where, objectively speaking, we want you to have it, regardless of whether you care about having that type of privacy. We care, right? We, the objective, omniscient halachists out there, care, yes.
But then, how do you deal with the case of for Shudar Abim, where it doesn't matter?
Ah, good. So Gavi says, oh, what about Shudar Abim? What's the simple answer to that question? So either you deny what I just said and said, no, this is all about assumptions, right? Or you say, Or look, there are parts, the parts of your house that face the Rishon Tzarabim were never private. So there, you can open it up. Right? There, not every part of your house, right? My in-laws have a big bay window that opens into the street. Right? The bedrooms don't have bay windows that open to the street. So the once you have the bay window opening up into the street, so open it bigger, who cares? Everyone understands that that's the living room. Right? That does, but that doesn't. But the parts of the house that don't have a bay window, the ones that, you know, are private, I mean,
the, a window that's facing the house next door might also be a window.
It might be.
Why should that be any different?
Correct. Correct. And the answer is, right, that, look, certain things, it could be, but people have, people, right, they're, so this Gemara is a little bit of multiple things, right? Some of it is probably still the Hezekiah issues and the contract issues that we've seen. But for the first time, the Gemara makes a statement that privacy is something we objectively value, right? Not because people care, right? But because we want it, we want you to have privacy, right? Look, right? Meaning he's not making a claim that, oh, you guys are nice to each other. It's, you're holy, right? The Shekhinah should be there because... And by the way, maybe this is a little bit crude, but maybe it'll help you understand this. Remember that we live in a world in which privacy is a right. That's like, we all know that. Who penned that, by the way? What?
Sorry, what?
Who penned that in American judicial theory, that privacy, the right of privacy?
John Marshall.
I'm going to give you 30 seconds to look it up, just so that you are a little bit well-read in basic American history, okay? In my shir, you will learn many things, including not just the biographies of Tavid Chaim, but here you will learn the... What? Yes. But in the ancient world, right, this was not as much of a given. Okay, this is your homework for tomorrow. Figure it out. Good. Anyways, but remember, in the ancient world, this wasn't a given. Oh, for God's sake. In the ancient world, this was not a given, right? It really wasn't a given, right? People, we're used to living in, like, you know, our nice private houses. But remember, people lived in like multi-generational one-bedroom houses, right? Privacy was not necessarily a given. What? Yes. Right? Right? What? Yes, I'm glad now that you know your rights in America. Very good. Thank you. Baruch Hashem. I was talking American history. Yes. Okay, fine. Anyways, fine. Now, I'm going to come... Yohanan is on the... I'm directing the just at Yohanan because what I'm about to say is related to his previous questions. If I wanted to say this is not related to Hezekiah, so that would be easy, right? That I would just say, okay, look, there's certain basic tzniut that is demanded of society that has nothing to do with Hezekiah. But in what sense could this be related to Hezekiah? This, and a hint, this relates directly to our conversation we had 5 minutes ago. So, which is that the line between subjective and objective is very complicated here, right? As we've talked about. Because yes, subjectively, people might care about anything. It might be that the fact that a basic level of tsniut is demanded from each person is actually what generates, right, or lies behind the subjective obligations to grant others privacy. Meaning, once the Torah says a very basic level of tsniut you should keep for yourself, right? So once you're the type of person who integrates that very basic Torah value of privacy, you're going to be sensitive to less egregious violations of privacy. And therefore, hezek ri'ah might be an expansion of, right, your basic obligation to be a private and sanua individual might generate this category of damage called hezek ri'ah. Right? So they might be related. Meaning, the very basic level of tsniut isn't just interpersonal. You have to maintain it yourself. But once the Torah is trying to develop sensitivity in people to privacy, so a violation of privacy is, right, the type of thing that might be considered damage. Because it'll, right, that objective category will expand itself, right, into... Now, it's true. Now, coming back, by the way, now that you've had time to look it up, it's true that certain rights to privacy are in the Constitution, but who is the most famous jurist in America? Andrew Dafka got the part of the pair who wrote it. Now, so the other person who wrote the book with him is the more famous one who have coined it. What? Is Louis Brandeis, right?
Brandeis,
yes, the Supreme Court Justice, the Jewish Supreme Court Justice. That he is the most famous person to have written the name of the book called The Right to Privacy in American Jurisprudence. Right? Yes, some of it emerges from the Constitution, but I was thinking Brandeis, right? Because, you know, it's a literal book and super, super, super famous. God. No American jurisprudence, no. What? How many? A lot.
A lot? Like 7%.
A lot. How many Sabbateans have served on the Supreme Court? Not as many, but Brandeis was actually from a family who was a Sabbatean, apparently. Like Shabtai Tzvi. Like follower of Shabtai Tzvi. Like that type of, you know. Anyways. Fine. So, good. So now we've seen all the key Gemaras. Okay? What we need to do is put this together. Because suddenly we have finally hit a pasuk after almost 2.5-3 blot of potential hezek ri'ah cases, right? We've hit a pasuk. And as we've asked in each case, if this is the basis of hezek ri'ah, then there's in fact a pasuk. And what hezek ri'ah is an obligation to maintain privacy, right? But it could be that this is different. There's a mitzvah to maintain basic privacy, right? Like, don't be looking into somebody else's house. But everything beyond that is something else, right? All this is open. Tomorrow, what I want you to do, now that we've seen every Gemara, and we've seen a Gemara that says that gradations in privacy are actionable, but according to Rashi, that's hezek ri'ah, but it could be something else. A Gemara that says that not only is there a value to maintaining other people's privacy, but you should be someone who wants to maintain your own privacy, right? We have to ask, does that integrate? What? Okay, so I'll finish now. Okay. How does that integrate a hezek ri'ah? Is that the key to hezek ri'ah? Is hezek ri'ah, which would totally shift our perspective. Until now, we've assumed that hezek ri'ah is fundamentally interpersonal. But maybe it's not. Maybe it's fundamentally about my obligation to be tzanua. And once I have an obligation to be tzanua, of course I can demand other people grant that to me. Now, there are going to be concentric circles of privacy at which point it's only subjective, right? But maybe it emerges fundamentally not from my expectation of others, but God's expectation of me to myself, right, to society. But we don't know because the Gemara never tells you, is this Hezekiah or is it something else? Right? So what we've seen is like, I don't know, 5-6 different cases where visual violations of privacy are raised as problems. But in many of the cases, it's not clear whether that's Hezekiah or that's something else. And putting all these pieces together and figuring out which of these is Hezekiah, which of them is something else, what do all these categories tell us? Are they the same and can be conflated and teach us something about each other? Or do they have to be split because these are fundamentally different categories? That is our work for probably at least tomorrow and probably at least 2 days, right? And then we will have, you know, in 4 or 5 shiurim, at least seen the overview of this massive topic called Hezekiah. I still want to do the issue of Hezek Shmiah once we've laid out these principles, but Rabbi Mann is starting, so I'm going to let you guys